Good morning, folks, and welcome back. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We are going to cover some ground here today with national news and looking at what has been going on with the Trump White House and General Flynn resigning or fired with who knew what when. How does this really affect the world we're in politically? What's happening inside that Trump White House? Is it really this dysfunctional? 410-319-8888 is our number. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. We are joined by Carla Wills, senior news producer at Democracy Now! Carla, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Mark.
And Dr. Carsonia Whitehead is with us. Kay Whitehead, of course, is on the show a lot. Associate Professor of Communication and African and African American Studies at Loyola University, Maryland, author of Race Brave, New and Selected Works, and My Black Sons Raising Boys in a Post-Racial America, and other works as well. And Kay, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Mark.
And Eugene Craig's in the house. Eugene Craig III, a Republican grassroots activist and former vice chair of the Republican Party here in Maryland. Good to have you in the studio, Eugene.
Welcome. Please, Senator. Glad to be on with the great one.
I don't know about that, but it's good to have you in the house. Thank you. So, folks, let's begin here. I mean, it seems that we've only been like 3 weeks into the Trump administration, and there seems to be an incredible amount of dysfunction. Carla Wills, I know you've been covering this really intensely on Democracy Now!, and we now are trying to figure out who knew what when. Mm-hmm. That it appears from the reading the Times and the Post that Donald Trump knew about this 2 weeks before he told Vice President Pence, who was then sent out to the world to defend something that was a lie, and that he said Pence was asked for his resignation because of his eroding level of trust, yet he knew about this fully 2 weeks before he even said that. And we don't know how deep this goes or how wide it goes, how important it is. How important is all this, Carla, do you think?
Oh, it's incredibly important. I mean, you know, before we had any of this actual, you know, the data in the transcripts and, you know, records of calls, you know, there was, you know, going back, there was just this idea that there was some Russian interference into the election. Of course, way back during the campaign when the DNC and Democratic and Hillary Clinton campaign had been hacked. You know, we knew there was this interference, and now we're seeing this slow trickle and rollout of evidence about how closely associated the Trump campaign and now even members of the Trump administration may have been in contact with Russian officials. And so the idea that I think there's always this bit of denial, like we can't believe something like this is actually happening. And so I think for a while, the press didn't really push this. And now we're, you know, not only the press, but, you know, of course, DOJ has been, you know, informing, you know, the media about what's going on. And so we're seeing this trickle of information that I think is going to become a huge snowball, and now we'll see, you know, how deep it really does go. But clearly we're finding out that, you know, as you said, Pence knew, Trump knew, as far back as a few weeks ago or in December when DOJ told them that, you know, what was going on. I guess he chose to just continue to wait it out, or whether this is evidence of their own connection with Russian officials. Kellyanne Conway, up until just the day before yesterday, Sean Spicer still saying, you know, Michael Flynn has the full confidence of the president, and then, you know, he resigned, you know, the day before yesterday. So it's just, there's so much, you know, obfuscation, and, you know, it's like they want to deny until they can't anymore, and even in the face of all kinds of evidence. And then, so it's really disturbing.
So, and do you agree, Eugene Craig, with the man you once loved to follow, Rand Paul, saying that they should ignore this and just go ahead and start dealing with issues?
Well, you know, I'll say this. I agree with Rand's sentiment. You know, you don't have so much time, especially in a legislative calendar. Do I think there is a time and place for investigations? Absolutely. And do I think that, you know, you should hold your own party accountable? Absolutely. You know, if you're not able to hold your own party accountable when things go wrong, you know, you lose more high ground to hold the other party accountable when things go wrong. But with that being said, I think you have to kind of sort the wheat from the chaff. Investigations when it comes to very, very serious things. But, you know, I don't think we need to be in a 24/7 perpetual investigation after investigation after investigation, literally tying up every single member of Congress. And that's what the Democrats want. You know, that's what they want. And I think that's the point that Rand was making. If we tie ourselves up in perpetual investigation, you know, round the clock, 24/7, 365, we won't see things done on tax reform. We won't see things done on infrastructure. We won't see things done on Obamacare. You know, we won't see things done on economic development and job growth. You know, real issues that are affecting Americans.
But Kate Whitehead, I come back to Eugene with another question. But I mean, I think that the issue here, though, is beyond kind of a partisan wrangle at this point. I mean, you're talking about this sounds some of the security of a nation in some sense. Who knew what when? It seems to speak to a dysfunction in the man that was put into this White House, who doesn't seem to know what he's really doing, or maybe he does. Kay.
I tend to agree with both the guests. I just want to add that I think this is a very serious situation and that it needs to be deeply investigated to really find out what's going on. The president came into office. It was already a level of distrust. We saw that in the 5 million people marching worldwide the day after his inauguration. We're now 3 weeks into his presidency, and every day it's something else that's further eroding our trust and our confidence in this president and in his administration. Now we're talking about international waves that are being run through this White House, and it is a great dysfunction. I mean, I tend to agree with what John McCain said. It's like we're at a point now where nobody is in charge. Nobody knows who's in charge. Nobody knows who's setting policy. Things just keep happening, and all we're doing is reacting to it without getting to the heart and the root of what the problem is. I suspect, I think as many people do who don't support this administration, that the heart root is the person who's sitting in as the president, but there's some deep divides that are taking place that must be investigated before we can move on to anything else.
It's interesting to me that, you know, let's take a step backwards in the history here. People are calling for Flynn to be investigated, maybe indicted under the Logan Act. And let's take a step back in time for a moment. No one's ever been really one person has been almost indicted by the Logan Act in the 19th century. But the Logan Act really, a little history here to get a perspective, was something that occurred because there was a man named Logan from Pennsylvania who was a senator who went to try to negotiate a deal with France while Adams was president. Adams was really angry about that, so they passed what became known as the Logan Act, going after him. And it's been used to critique people many times. Jimmy Carter was critiqued because he went to try to negotiate.
Jesse Jackson.
And others who have gone to try to negotiate with foreign governments, not in the name of the United States government, but on their own. So it seems to me that talking about the Logan Act, which the press seems to be doing a lot, is kind of takes us away from the heart of the issue, which is there are a number of issues here, but one of them has to do with what relationship did the Trump campaign have with Russia? How much did Donald Trump know during the campaign and post? Why did he know for 2 weeks about Flynn and not tell his vice president about this? And how deep was his involvement? It may have been cursory, but it could have been deep. We don't know what happened during the lead up to the election itself. So there are a lot of unanswered questions here, which puts this cloud over Trump, which doesn't allow him to push his agenda that you were talking about a minute ago, Eugene. You can't push an agenda when this stuff is happening all around you. Yeah. That becomes the agenda of the moment.
Right.
I mean, it's wasted political capital. It's unforced errors. you know, many of us saw the issue around Mike Flynn a long time ago. But I'll put it this way. There has been significant reporting on the White House intrigue, the House of Bannon, the House of Priebus, you know, and the relationships thereof. And I think, you know, part of that, what we're seeing is we're seeing that on display. You know, you can't keep your vice president in the dark on something as huge as your national security advisor, you know, had you lie on national TV to the American public. You know, there was a New York Times article that was released last night. It's pretty much stated that, you know, Trump officials were in contact with, you know, Russian intelligence officials. Paul Manafort has very, very deep ties to Ukraine and Russia. CNN, you know, reported earlier this morning that they know exactly which Trump officials were, you know, in communication with Team Russia, but they're waiting on comments. They're waiting on comments and statements, you know, which is fair when it comes to journalism. But, you know, I think, you know, Team Trump has to take this very seriously. And, you know, if we're going to move forward to talk about, you know, actual agenda, actual, you know, improvements for this country, it's going to, you know, you got to stop the unforced errors. I mean, it's still amateur hour. I mean, this is, I mean, honestly, what other time does, you know, the White House Daily Briefing, you know, I call it the Sean Spicer Show. You know,
you want to Saturday Night Live or the real
one?
Oh,
the real one. well, you know, I told somebody yesterday. I said, I said the Spicer Show deserves an Emmy and Oscar for best rated, you know, TV midday drama.
and the other part of this, Carlo, on the way to opening the phones here, is that there was something I was pondering this morning, and this is total conjecture, but I think it's something we should consider. What is happening inside? Trump has been tweeting about how terrible the NSA and FBI are, mm-hmm. In his tweets out there at the moment, which is how he communicates to the world.
Which is unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. But one of the things that a question that does lead to, Carla Wills, is why are these leaks intentional from the NSA and the FBI? Is there kind of a move afoot by people in the intelligence world, which is, I think some people are asking this question, to get rid of Trump?
Well, you know what? I think part of it is intentional. You know, it's really their own. I think as this administration came in, I think this is beyond unforced errors. I mean, first of all, they built this, their campaign, and now the administration on, clearly, with, you know, as you just, with the other guest just mentioned, you know, they were Trump campaign officials who've been in contact with Russian officials. That story just came out last night. And so this is not about unforced errors. This is beyond that. This is what this White House is, and it's being revealed. So I don't see this as slip-ups. This is part of the foundation, and we're finding this out. And so what I think is happening is because, and we've seen these stories over and over again, that this administration is unlike any other. This is beyond the normal kind of slip-up that and getting their footing that any new administration has going into the White House. This is a very frightening administration to a lot of even just bureaucrats who've been in Washington. And so some folks have taken it upon themselves, you know, whether they're in the intelligence community, FBI, NSA, whatever, to say, look, we have got to expose. This is the leakiest White House we've seen and forever. And there is a reason for it, because people are afraid. And there are folks in bureaucratic positions that said, we have to, you know, make people know, to let people know. I mean, you know, they're back in, you know, years ago, you know, we had, you know, Ed Snowden and those folks. Now we've got actually people inside who have to let people, you know, to get this information out here, because this is really frightening.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kay, and then I'm going to open the phones and get their first caller in, Sergeant Freeman. Go ahead.
I think something that you said earlier, where you said, you know, maybe he does know what he's doing. I think about the New York Times article that came out today that say maybe this West Wing is actually using chaos as a tactical weapon, that there's a sense of shock and awe that's happening among the American public, where if it's always something, at some point you get exhausted, you get drained, you stop pushing against what you see in Washington because you get so overwhelmed because things are happening so quickly, so many things are happening, and you're trying to figure out on the spot how to respond to these things. If this is his tactic, that he's using chaos, he's using it very effectively. You know, Carla's right. It is a very frightening administration. I'm sure if it's frightening for those on the inside, imagine how the public feels. Imagine how I feel when you don't really have all the story and you don't know whether to trust the newspaper, you don't know whether to trust the reporter, you know you can't trust the president, you're not sure who has the correct story, and you don't know who's in charge or who's making policy.
And, you know, it's just, I'm going to open the phones right here and just put these facts that we do know. I mean, that there is this press conference on Tuesday with your friend Spicer. No, I'm just teasing Gene.
He's a good guy. Sean good Spicer. Guy.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Great
wonderful
I like guy. Sean.
I'm glad. But so he said there that there was, he did not believe that any Trump team members had been in touch with the Russian government before the election. His quote was, there's nothing that would conclude me that anything different has changed with respect to that time period. But then the New York Times reports the NSA was intercepting these conversations because they involved Russian intelligence operatives.
Yeah.
Right. And so they were targeted the DNC. And it was Flynn. It was Roger Stone, who was a political operative. It was Paul Manafort, who said, "How do you know who's intelligence agents or not?" But we don't know the depth of these conversations.
Right.
We don't have transcripts yet. Nobody knows what happens. And so, the sooner that stuff is out, the better for the entire for this.
Everything. I agree with you.
You know, I mean, it is. I mean, it's in an administration. It doesn't seem to have any kind of solid footing. And before that, I do want to get into some other issues with administration as well as people like the people who are actually behind the scenes and what's going on there. But let me open the phones first at 410-319-8888. Sergeant Freeman, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, guys. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't talked to you guys in a while, but Carla, I agree with you. And, sir, your guest, I mean, that's the type of denial, that the type of rhetoric that's coming out of the White House. I mean, you're saying that it's unforced errors. But, I mean, this guy, let's just talk about Flynn. He is the creator of Lock Her Up. I mean, this guy, he was kicked out of the Obama administration. So this is the type of individuals that the Trump administration, my sister calls him Donald Trump, by the way, and well, she was actually, just for capable reference here, she was in the meeting when Donald Trump came to, she works for Carrier. She is a shop steward. She was literally in that room where, when Donald Trump went to Indiana and lied about the number of jobs that he saved. And my sister told me that they already had 700 engineer jobs that was already earmarked to go ahead and create infrastructure in Mexico to present a new product. So he lied. He uses people as puppets, and Pence is held out to dry because, hey, you can't make this stuff up. Comedians are making their living off of this. I mean, Pence is Flavor Flav. I mean, I mean, he's the total hype man. They send him out there with information, keeping him out of the loop. As Flavor Flav is, you don't have to prepare for the concert. Just go out there and hype the crowd. So the information doesn't have to be legitimate. It just has to stir up the base that they are appealing to, and then so maybe certain places don't even get fiber optics in Iowa or Wyoming. So they're listening to the Rush Limbaughs and people like that. So their base is getting stirred up. And here's the thing. Imagine that if you grilled Hillary Clinton with the Benghazi issue and they rushed her testimony to the Senate, imagine what would happen if, let's say, she was in the White House, or even this happened to Barack Obama, for example. So this is the same type of stuff that goes on the Hill. So you cannot move past this. You cannot move this past this. And and last but not least, everyone on CNN and NBC News and so forth, they're saying, what information does Putin have on him? Well, guess what? That golden shower might still be out there, guys.
Well, and it might be. I will say this, that you know,
that dossier is fake news.
It's always dangerous to kind of speculate on what's real and what's not real. They haven't. Yeah. I mean, that was thrown out there. There's been no evidence shown that actually ever occurred. But
there's no evidence, and if there's no evidence, that makes it fake news.
Yeah.
Well, alternative facts.
fake news and alternative facts. I mean, I don't go there just because only when I'm joking, because that whole push by the Trump administration and people around him to create this notion of fake news, mm-hmm. I mean, to me is abominable. It is his trying to quiet the press from doing their job, just like he's trying to quiet and stop the courts from doing their job constitutionally.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is some very dangerous precedents being set by this, and I don't think people who are concerned about it, I don't think that we have to fall into the trap of accusing him of things that we don't even know existed. But we do have to insist on the truth to know what is really going on and not allow this kind of chaos to take place. Okay?
Yeah, we just can't normalize the language that he's using or the behavior or the stance that he's taking. The more we use it and we're not joking about it, the more we begin to normalize it and we accept it as the truth. So I have a problem with that as well.
And fake news, I don't know if you, of course, I'm sure you followed, what just transpired with Omarosa and April
yes.
Ryan, who's at American Urban Radio Network. She's mm-hmm. White House correspondent. And, you know, one of the first things Omarosa said after, you know, the allegations came out about her being intimidating to April is fake news, hashtag fake news, alternative facts. It's like, wait, you know, because that is the tactic of this Trump administration. And as I've said, you know, the only check that they have, because, you know, clearly Congress is Republican-controlled until they're rolling over. The only check that they have right now is the third branch of government, which is the judiciary, which has been challenging him, and the press, which is, you know, the fourth estate, our role to check them. And so he has made very strategic attacks against both of those entities, the so-called judges.
So-called judges.
Right,
you know,
so-called Ninth Circuit.
This is their tactic, and we have to be mindful that he's doing that simply because we're the ones that are checking his, are the only checks against unfettered power.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole way he governs or doesn't govern is a question that has to be raised here. Let me go back to the phones here and get a comment before we go to break, and I'm going to raise some of the issues around this White House and some of the things that Democracy Now! Has been reporting on recently that I want to bring up, as well as some things that are in the press about what's happening internally inside the White House. At 410-319-8888, we are here with Dr. Kay Whitehead, Eugene Craig III, and Carla Wills, and you at 410-319-8888. Nick, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How are you?
Very well, Nick. Good morning.
It's incredible. This is. I bet you George Orwell would look at this and say, "Hold it now." And you know, I read George Orwell when I was in high school, and the basic premise, and you guys can comment on this, was my opinion of the basic premise was the authoritarian state. It didn't care what you thought. You're going to wear the uniform that we give you. You're going to do the perfunctory job that we tell you to do. And you know, one of the iconic statements in that book I remember was, the state ingratiated itself to answer a question as to why we're at war with Eurasia. The answer, we're always at war with Eurasia. That was the basic premise of George Orwell's book. This now, Mark, is, well, for one, Trump voters and your guests, because I heard his that logic. This is just, I want to believe it. That's the part I think that Orwell would look at with, you know, be incredulous about. These people, these Trump supporters want to believe it. Nobody's forcing them to believe this. This is, this guy, I'm not going to be argumentative, but your guest is daring to use the phrase fake news. You, sir, dare to use that term in this era with the people who created the alternative facts and fake news is question mark. It does defies logic. But let me ask your guest something, Mark.
Go ahead.
Does your guest believe, do you believe Betsy DeVos, whatever her name is, it will be good as Secretary of Education?
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right. We'll answer that question about Secretary DeVos, however you say her name. People say it 10 different ways. I'm not sure. But
DeVos.
We'll come back to that. We have to take a short break and come back. And on the way to break, let me just say this: the book to read by George Orwell on this is called Politics and the English Language, which I've just begun rereading. I plan to talk about that in the coming week because that's the book, even more than 1984, that speaks to the place we're in now. We can take a short break and come back. Don't go away. Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I want to remind you, as we get back into this conversation, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's a credit union, not just a bank, belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. And we are here with Dr. Carsonia Whitehead. Kay Whitehead, of course, Associate Professor of Communication and African and African-American Studies at Loyola University, Maryland. Eugene Craig III, Republican grassroots activist. Carla Wills, Senior Producer of Democracy Now! And you all at 410-319-8888. By phone, you can email us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in. We want to get your thoughts. So let's talk about, we are planned to have a conversation about education and the future of education next week with some folks to kind of wrestle with this DeVos issue and where it's taking us. I know we have very different opinions here, but let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, I know you like her, Jean Craig. I think she's an anathema to public education, to be very clear and frank. I don't think she knows anything about education. Clearly she did when she was being questioned. She couldn't answer any questions that anybody threw at her about anything about education, whether it was about pedagogy, how schools run, about the laws that affect education. She knew nothing. So, I mean, that's just my editorial opinion.
That's fair. That's completely fair. I'm a Betsy DeVos supporter. I'll tell you why. I'm a school choicer. I believe in parental choice. I believe in empowering a parent to make the decision. I think if we're going to spend, you know, $9,000, $10,000, $13,000 on a kid to get education, I think that money should be attached to the student, and the school should compete for it. We're sitting here on the campus of Morgan State University. School choice works. You know, it works at the higher education level. It can work at the lower education level. K through 12. I'm a supporter of Betsy DeVos. I think it's, you know, when we look at school systems like Baltimore, school systems like D.C., school systems like Philadelphia, I think it may be worth taking a look at a new way forward. I think we owe it to the kids. I think we owe it to the families.
So I'm not going to get stuck on
school choice is not a that has nothing to do with pedagogy. This has nothing to, that's a business decision, basically. That's how she's approaching education as an industry, as a business. I mean, you're talking about being on the campus of Morgan State University. She and her husband, they invested in a student debt collection agency that does business with the Department of Education. She's not looking at education as, educating our kids and all of that. She's talking about choices because, you know, they're the companies that invest in education and offer these alternatives. She's into, you know, homeschooling and all of that, which is another whole other, I don't even want to go down that road with homeschooling and Christian education and what all that means.
Well, as a person, I
do want to just kind of jump in here.
Before people get jumping, let me let Carla finish her thought. Then Kate, come on back in. Then we'll move ahead.
My just thought is that to have someone who heads up the Department of Education, who's never been an educator, who's never cared about public education, which is the backbone of the education system in this country, it just is galling to me.
What were you going to say, Kay? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to jump in. Thank you for letting me jump in. Sorry, Carla, to interrupt you. That I'm a big supporter of public schools. I think that's very well known. I do believe in school choice, but I don't believe in funneling money away from the public school system into private or into parochial schools. I don't have a problem, and I am a supporter of people who choose to homeschool their children. I also support parochial education. So I support it across the board. My problem is with her lack of experience in this area. My problem is that I felt like they have pushed someone on us because she is a big Trump supporter, and the assumption that she can just handle anything that they give her. This is a very serious area. We're talking about the education of our children, particularly in the public school environment, and is in danger. And I'm not sure she can solve this problem at all. I don't think she's even aware of what the problem is, and her solution is to pull the money out of public schools, set up this voucher system, which really privileges certain communities and, of course, marginalizes others. So I know this is a deep hole to go into.
Right. So.
I just can't believe people actually support that she could do this job. That is just a surprise to me.
And so we will jump into that debate in the next week in a major way. So I think that we have been approached by a number of people who want to get on the show to discuss it. I think we should get a lot of different opinions on here and dive into it. Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. Rush, you're on the air. Welcome.
To you, your guests, and my fellow listeners. Mark, I think we, and I understand the public education piece, but I think we really need to focus on this Russia piece to understand what's going on here.
Go ahead.
Because Putin is in serious trouble with his economy. While we here in America are enjoying 2% growth, and people are not appreciating that, saying it's too slow, look around and compare it to what? Japan, just numbers just came in for 2016, 1%. And in Russia, they have negative growth. They have no growth. They are losing a 2.2 tenths to 1.5% of the economy each year for the last 4 years. And what happened was when Putin went into Crimea, Obama put his foot on his neck. And when Obama came to office, one greenback would buy you 27 Russian rubles. Today, one greenback will buy you 70 Russian rubles. Okay? So what is happening is Obama was not big on fracking, but he allowed fracking to go on because he knew that would keep the price of natural gas and oil low, which is also killing the Russian economy. So we need to understand, why is Trump in such a hurry to undo all of the work that Obama did, in terms of corralling Russia and putting the pressure on them to come into the world community and behave themselves? It's real serious, because you can't convince me one second that a three-star general did not know that talking to Russian officials would be monitored. That's just out of the question. So why would he put himself in that position if his boss or his boss's boss did not know what was going on? Now, we just had Oliver North confess in his last book that Ronald Reagan knew everything about Iran-Contra. I think we may even have a little Nixon thing going on with the Watergate, because this doesn't make sense that a general would behave in this way. You don't undercut your boss. Are you serious?
Well, the question, no. Right. And as the question is whether he was undercutting his boss or whether the boss knew about it the whole time.
As somebody that's the former director of national intelligence, Mike Flynn definitely knew all the communications with Russian either diplomats or operatives were being monitored.
So has anybody answered that question, Carla?
No, I mean, yes, we're all speculating at this point. But, you know, yeah, there are real questions. I mean, there was, you know, I think it's during The Intercept where they, you know, questioned Donald Trump tweeting. You know, this is after, you know, they urged when Pence had said that he had not discussed, you know, when, you know, he had that conversation with Flynn, and Flynn was saying that he had not discussed this, you know, this with Pence, but supposedly had this conversation with the Russian ambassador to stand down and not respond to the Obama administration's sanctions against them. So then after that, Trump then tweets, "Great move on delay by V. Putin. I always knew he was very smart." Now, it's just a strange coincidence that Trump tweets this after this conversation that, you know, the Russian ambassador had with Flynn. Why? If Trump had no idea. You know, it just begs the question. Now, I'm not going to say that he knew, but I'm just wondering. I got questions. That's all I'm saying.
So I'm opening the phone chain again, but one of the things that Eugene Craig joked about in here during the break, which I'm going to throw out very seriously here, Eugene said that could Trump be the second shortest presidency in the history of the United States? The first, yeah, of course, being William Henry Harrison, who died a month into his office.
Right.
Back in 1883, four was
it? Somewhere around there.
Yeah. So
before my time.
It was before my time, too, believe it or not. But
y'all know Mark been around since the Polk days.
Hey. Ooh, that's
cool. All right, man. This might be the last time you come on my show. But I think that, I mean, something could really be afoot here when you see the established Republican leadership in Congress, people like McCain and Graham, and now even
Roy Blunt.
Or I was about to say Blunt, Ray Blunt from Missouri. Who are coming out and kind of pushing some issues, trying to seize back control of their party, I think, in some ways, and are terrified where this is going. And I think that the leaks you talked about earlier, Carl, are kind of like a sieve coming out of the White House. What the intelligence community is unleashing to the press in leaking stuff to the press about what are really security issues, which shouldn't be leaked out. But they are being leaked out because I think there's a great deal of fear out here about who this guy is and what he's doing.
Yeah,
I think that to me is really what we could. I have no crystal ball. I say things, you know, and we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. But we could see the unraveling of this White House right in front of our eyes.
Well, I'll put it this way:
I think we are seeing it. I think we are actually starting to see it. I think we are definitely at the beginning of seeing this White House unravel. I don't think it's something down the horizon. I think it is happening now.
I mean, I'll put it this way.
What are your party people telling you, Eugene Craig?
Well, you know, we want to get on to, you know, the real serious issues. You know, these are distractions. You have Kellyanne Conway, you know, making full, you know, plugs from the White House briefing room. You know, you have Omarosa, you know, staring down and, you know, trying to go to war with April Ryan and physically intimidating her. Then you have Steve Bannon, you know, pretty much playing a role of Darth Sidious right now. You know, it's these are all distractions. These are all, you know, these are things that are inhibiting good elected officials from doing good work for good people. And you know, I think a lot of things should be investigated.
From the other perspective.
But also, I will say this. The FBI, you know, one thing that has been reported is that the FBI has had ongoing investigations into a lot of these issues for the last couple months. And, you know, I would suspect that some of these investigations should be coming to a close soon with findings and maybe some possible indictments.
So I think, you know, Carla, maybe people on the left and liberals should be careful what they wish for, because if you get rid of Donald Trump, who's a madman, you have a man who knows what he's doing. Right?
Mike Pence is an amazing guy. He's amazing.
Who say that was the plan, the strategy in the beginning.
All along
was to, you know, because Trump is very easily manipulated, and that's why, you know, he ended up with these folks around him, who Steve Bannon
number
one. And so Trump is potentially the pawn in this whole game, you know, because Pence is the one that they really wanted to be president, first of all. And so, you know, this would be no celebration. I mean, for me, you know, when folks are cheering about Mike Flynn, I'm like, why are we cheering? This is just a game. They moved this one out. It's not like he's going to be replaced by anyone better. So, I mean, unless we're talking about the entire unraveling of this entire administration, this is just a game where you move one of these people out and the other in, and if Trump should happen to be impeached and not make it and need to resign, then Pence is, you know, like you said, for most folks on the left, think he's the worst option. He's even worse because he does know what he's doing. And he has, you know, the deep connections in Congress and in Republican government. You know, we know his status, his stand on LGBTQ issues. We know his stand on abortion. We know his stand on... So this is, you know, this is not a better option.
And for those of you on the right, you love this Michael Pence.
I mean, look, Mike Pence is a great, his time in Congress, he was a great legislator. His time in Congress, he's a great legislator. He had a pretty good thriving economy in Indiana when he was governor. And I think he has played a great moderating tone as vice president. But to go back to one of the other guests' earlier point, I've said before here on this show, Steve Bannon and the unabashed Democrat Omarosa Manigault could make me fall into the same camp as Lindsey Graham and John McCain.
Said by our resident libertarian in house here. 410-319-8888. Carl, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Carl.
I just wanted to make a general comment that it seems like we may be focusing on the wrong challenge or problem. Everybody is expecting Trump to do something different than what he's already done. And one of the main reasons that a lot of people said they wanted him in office was because he was going to be an outsider, he's businessman and everything else, but they didn't really delve into just what he was doing on the outside in those businesses. And it seems like he's trying to run the country the same way he runs his businesses, but the sad thing is we can't declare bankruptcy for the country. Like, he has enough money to wait out everything that he's doing. And, you know, he's surrounding himself by sycophants that are going to go ahead and just support any and everything that he does to the detriment of everybody else that isn't in that 1%. It just seems like a huge money grab for him. And at the cost of an entire country. So that's all I got.
Now, Carl, I think that you're right. And Kay, I think Carl is right. And I think those of us watching this very closely did not expect anything else but what we're seeing now. I said it during the campaign that if Trump becomes president, you're going to see a chaotic White House. Which is a chaos. He thrives on this chaos.
I mean, Steve Bannon.
I don't think it's anything new. I think what we're seeing is what a lot of people suspected. The work that we're doing to mobilize and to speak out is work that we've been planning and talking about for months. I mean, what's happening is really what Carla said. It's just the moving of the pieces on the board. And even though we're now starting to see the effects of it, I believe there's a plan that's already in place. And I'm not that deep into being a conspiracy theorist. I just don't think that the White House and those that are making these policies and plans are as surprised as I am. I think there is a plan in motion, and when Trump either resigns or gets pushed out, Mike Pence is who they really want. Mike Pence is even more conservative. We know his policies. We know his stances. He is not a surprise. He will move right into being president, and the plan that they have put forth will continue to move forward. We're caught up in the chaos. We're caught up in the confusion, and it cannot continue. At some point, it's going to unravel. And when it does unravel, what moves in Mike Pence in a very different type of White House, a White House that people are more used to, that continues to move forward, even though it's continuing to marginalize people, people are more used to a Mike Pence type of White House than a Trump White House.
And Carla, and we'll come right back here into the studio with Eugene after this, but Carla, you know, one of the things that this also is happening when we're focusing here on Trump and the White House and Russia and all the other chaos that comes out of it, we're not paying attention to a lot of the things that are going on under the radar, at least for most people. Like yesterday, we had a program on the FCC and how the FCC is being revamped so industry can do at its will and kill the democratic nature of the internet and more. You know, when we see the Securities and Exchange Commission no longer requiring oil and gas companies to reveal who they are doing business with around the world. And it's all this gigantic corporate agenda is taking over the major policies, DAPL and more. And that's the stuff we're not focusing on, which is the danger in some ways of always getting sucked in to Trump and his madness, though it's hard not to, given that he's the president.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, nobody's paying attention to that. FCC, the new chair of the FCC, this guy, Ajit Pai,
yeah.
He blocked like 9 companies from providing, you know, affordable high-speed internet to low-income families. You know, like he took away, you know, the FCC support from, like the FCC used to support a plan so that people calling from prison wouldn't have to have such exorbitant costs. He blocks that. You know, he doesn't. Of course, he's against net neutrality. So it's just like, you know, the real meaningful things that are being snuck under the radar, like Ajit Pai, or like the increase in raids and ICE raids that have been going on over this last week. You know, the way the raids used to happen, where, you know, and yes, we understand President Obama was called the deporter in chief, but there was a different way that raids were conducted. And you know, I've talked to people who said there was a little bit more transparency and cooperation with the federal government, and you knew what was going on. They would maybe target a particular criminal. They'd go after that person. But what's happening now is, you know, ICE is going out. They find this person, but whoever else is in the vicinity and in the area, they get swept up. They just deported a woman to Mexico who had two kids who were born here. She was a felon only because she had to, you know, get her papers, you know, to work. She'd been checking in for 8 years,
right.
And now all of a sudden they deport right. her. You know, yeah. So these things that are going on that are affecting people right now, you know, that detrimentally, that are harming people every day now. New batches of people. We didn't even go into the immigration ban and people who had been detained and all of that. Unfortunately, there's a stay on that. But, you know, there's so many other things going on right now that this administration is doing to hurt people. And we're not even paying attention to that in the way that we could.
So let's go back to the phone unless you want to jump in real quick.
I'm good.
410-319-8888. Let's go to line four. Benu, is it? You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I just had a brief comment and question about the boss's appointment and the gentleman saying that he supports Boston. That's good for Baltimore schools and other schools like Baltimore. I'm just curious how that plays out in reality. Understanding that student choice is basically a gift to the middle class and upper middle class. When you're talking about we're going to give people choices, you're talking about people who could afford choice. So when you have families and students in places like Baltimore, and you say that that's going to be good for them, specifically how?
Have you seen what's going on in New York City? Have you ever seen a lottery for charter schools in New York City? I mean, around this country, parents are looking for other options other than failing public schools. I mean, in Baltimore, I mean, we can talk Baltimore for a second. I mean, how does $80 million just disappear, like poof, be gone? I mean, there are real structural issues. And, you know, it is about time that we look at a new way forward. I'm a proponent, I don't know if you heard what I said earlier, I'm a proponent of attaching the money that the state and the city's already going to spend on a kid and letting the parent decide which school they want to send their kid to.
But what you're talking there is, which we can't get into now, is that is dismantling the public school system,
it forced bad public schools to compete with kids. Bad schools are not entitled to students. Bad schools are not entitled to students.
I'm sorry, Bano, one final thought, Bano, before we go back to our guest.
Yes, if you have a family, let's say, who's living in Northeast Baltimore, and you're saying, well, we're going to give you this amount of money, and you're saying, oh, well, then they get to choose a school to go to. Okay, in reality, where is that family going to send their child to? Not in this fairy tale world where you're saying, oh, you could choose a mythical school that will mythically be better in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
What practical, real-life school? There is none. So what you're saying is you're giving benefit to people who are already in a position in a middle-class environment where it will be beneficial.
So you're saying that we should keep that family in Northeast Baltimore that wants a better opportunity for the kid in a family school? I'm sorry, that's unacceptable in my world.
So what were you saying, Carla? Thank you, Baina, for the call. Appreciate it.
But why is the response to come up with these other alternatives rather than fix the failing schools? I've never understood that.
If the teachers union are very much willing to give local governments the power to get rid of bad teachers, bad administrators, bad staff, then let's go for it. But until teaching unions are willing to cave on that, then I think we need to look at alternative methods.
I mean, there's study after study after study has shown that these charter schools do no better than public schools. Some public schools, in fact, do better than the charter schools, and some of the charter schools do better than the public schools, than the other public schools, and that the private charter schools run by private businesses happen to have the worst showing of all the schools in the country, mm-hmm. that should take the money from the school system, take the money out of public education, and do not perform. That's a problem. So, I mean, there has to be a different way, Kay, for us to reform the system other than privatizing it, it seems to me.
I completely agree, and I know that you're dealing with this on your show next week, and that this is a hole that we fall into. You know, the debate around, is it about attaching the money to the student? Is it about dealing with these charter schools? Or is it about really what the heart of the problem is, putting the money into fixing the public school system? It has been broken for a very long time. We get people into office, they throw money at it, they have all these type of solutions, and nothing is working. So instead of doing that, let's come up with another system. And in this way, it is going to marginalize already marginalized communities. I have this voucher to send my student to whatever school I want to send them to. What are my options here in Baltimore City? Where am I actually going to send them? Into the citywide schools? Well, I can't get into them. So what am I going to do? I think we have to use Baltimore as an example, which you did, Eugene. We need to look to fix the problem. Yes, money has gone missing. Let's investigate and fix the root of the problem, which is trying to find a better way to give public school education to the children of this country who cannot afford to or would rather not go to an independent or parochial school.
So we have
it's a fixable problem.
We have a tweet. Melissa tweeted in, $80 million didn't disappear from the school budget. Flat funding, rising costs, declining enrollment are key. Your guests should look at the numbers. And I think that it's a complex thing that will happen to city schools, which I don't want to get into now, but it is more than just a disappearing $80 million. There's a lot that happened there.
But, I mean, one thing that we can't deny is that we're seeing the same exact result in multiple jurisdictions across the country. Failing progressive liberal policies that have trapped millions of our students.
The issue is that this system under Republicans and Democrats for the last 60 years have failed poor children in this country.
I agree.
Yes.
We have failed kids, black children in the inner cities. We have failing kids in Appalachia. We have failing kids on the Native reservations. Mm-hmm. We have failing kids in the poor Latino communities. Mm-hmm. We're failing our children. Nobody, you know, is like Carl Stokes, when we debated this in the show the other day, when he mentioned on our program about poverty in America, what poverty has done. Growing up in poverty, what I said in return was, yes, but poverty in 1958 and 1962, when we were kids, was not the poverty that kids live in. You didn't have neighborhoods with abandoned houses, yep. with people who lived in isolation and desolation. That never existed. That's the problem. And we have to fix all of that and understand that's where our kids are coming from. And that's why the test scores are so low, mm-hmm. not because teachers aren't doing their job and not because the systems are failing, because our system has failed tens of millions of people in this country. That's where the problem is, I think.
Yeah, you know I agree. I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, editorial number 17.
Man, whenever I'm on the show, Mark loves that editorial.
I do want to thank all three of you for being with us. This has been great.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Kay Whitehead, always great to have you in the house. Associate Professor of Communication and African and African-American Studies at Loyola University, Maryland. And
thank
author
so
of
much,
now
sir.
Three books, four books.
Four books, but
four
I
books.
Love you.
Four books. Carla Wills, senior producer at Democracy Now. Always wonderful to have you with us, Carla. I mean, you had so much depth. Great to have you here.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Look forward to seeing you soon, either in New York or here in Baltimore. And Eugene Craig III, Republican grassroots activist. Always great to have
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it, brother.
Coach and Thinking in Mind on the program to challenge us all. Good to have you here.
Appreciate it.
All right, we got to take a short break. When we come back from this short break, we are going to come back to Baltimore, focusing on this new police city initiative, not arresting people for certain crimes, and talk about what that lead program is, how it works, can it be effective, what's happened in other cities, what could happen here. Stay with us.